On this morning's Off the Ball Breakfast,
we had this.
I had people calling me last week asking me, was there any way I'd be able to get a better ticket for him for an All-Ireland quarterfinal? I've been involved with Kerry for I don't know how many years. Nobody has ever in their life called me about a ticket for a quarterfinal of an All-Ireland. It hasn't happened. Like, I don't even think the sport is I think it's completely unrecognisable from what we've seen previously.
And there was also some of this.
Finley is a character. He is absolute character. He actually used to have a YouTube channel where he'd review wrestling matches in a Cain Gleb mask. There you go.
How did we find this?
Yeah, what is it? Yeah,
come on, what's this? Spill the beans.
I don't know if it exists anymore, but it was pulled up in camp many moons ago and it was incredible.
Catch up now on the Go Loud app and every weekday morning when Off the Ball Breakfast is live from 7:30 on your OTB social channels.
The News Run on Off the Ball.
With UPMC Orthopaedic Care. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
This is News Talk.
Good evening and welcome along to Tuesday night's Off the Ball. It's Owen here with you until 10 o'clock this evening. And we've got a packed show coming your way between now and then. We've got a couple of big name inter-county stars chatting to us across the evening. So we're going to kick it off with our Maz Paddy Burns from 7:30 to reflect on their championship exit at the hands of Kerry on Sunday afternoon from 8 to 9. Then we're going to have Shane O'Donnell first up. He's going to chat about his own inter-county plans for next year and potentially beyond. Of course, Clare with a disappointing end to the season, not getting out of the Munster Hurling Championship, so we'll see how the idea of retirement sits in his own head. And then also between 8 and 9, we're going to be speaking to Leona Maguire, because it is Women's Irish Open Week at Carton House this week. She's back on Irish soil in the middle of a grueling schedule. So looking forward to catching up with Leona a little bit later on. And then after 9 o'clock, we're going to be joined by Cormac O'Donoghue, who is the chairperson of the Nafina Club here in Dublin, and Eamon Dillon, the former hurler with the Dublin Intercounty team. He was playing that day in 2013 when they lost to Cork in the All-Ireland semi-final. So a bit of a deep dive into hurling in Dublin, the direction of travel of hurling. Was it just a one-off against Limerick a couple of weeks ago, or is it actually a sign that they're about to come along and be a force in hurling? So plenty coming up over the next 3 hours. Our number is 0879 180 180, which you can get us on WhatsApp. Kathleen McNamee is here with us in studio. Hello, Kathleen.
Hello.
And Cameron Hill is back from traversing the western part of mainland Europe. Cameron, how are you doing?
Not too bad, Owen. Stop short of going into the east. I just I'm not ready for that yet.
Yeah, you respect the Iron Curtain.
Yeah, exactly. I stopped literally at the Brandenburg Gate in Berlin and said, that's enough.
Where did you go?
So it was Amsterdam to Brussels, and then Brussels to Strasbourg via pretty much all of Germany on Monday a week ago, and then from Strasbourg to Frankfurt, and then finished in Berlin. So highly recommend Strasbourg to anyone who hasn't been, especially in the summer. It's unbelievably beautiful.
That's it. When you listed out all of those places, that might have been the place that I'd have been least enthused about. So it's interesting that stuck out to you. Why is Strasbourg one of the best places?
Stunning architecture, first off. Like, the cathedral just dominates everything. But I was there when I was on my Erasmus. I went to the Christmas market, but like, Christmas markets are not the best time to see a place because it's just chock full of people and you don't actually see the city itself. But being there in the summer, there's just a really nice kind of easy breezy feel to it. It's not hugely rammed with tourists. I mean, after tonight it might be, but
exactly.
Like, just very, very nice. Like, I arrived in on Monday night, having travelled from Köln to Mannheim to Strasbourg, and just suffered the abomination that is the German train network now. But I tried to. I was like, okay, I need to get 2 big litres of water. And usually, you can back yourself at 10 o'clock at night to find like a kind of, you know, dodgy enough late shop.
A small kiosk
that's selling water and like 5 oranges or something. Like, it's definitely not a front, these shops. Couldn't find a single one in Strasbourg, and had to, like, I went into a kebab shop and just bought all of their water. But yeah, just a really, really lovely vibe. Similar to Bordeaux, which is one of my favourite cities, but I would definitely go back.
Okay, so good on architecture, bad on big bottles of water available at 10 p.m.
Yeah.
4 stars.
Light and shade.
Yeah. Did you miss us? Did you miss anything in the sports agenda? Or were you away checking your phone thinking, geez, I really wish I was, you know, updating the nation on the sports news today?
Well, it just goes to show the sort of butterfly effect. You miss one LOI late night and Duffer leaves.
Oh, of course, yes.
So
we're actually going to get to the root of why Duffer left tonight, and it's because Cameron wasn't
around.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. He left, and then Moses Dyer, top scorer of the league, leaves, yeah. Which was actually great timing for us because we were down in M&DC Park last Friday night for a show. And I mean, it was Galway versus Shelburne. It was like the two biggest stories in League of Ireland right now.
I know, it couldn't have been more perfect timing for us. And it was funny, the attitude in the room on the night, because I think the Moses Dyer news, obviously it was majority Galway fans that came in, but I think they were kind of on the fence about how they felt. You know, I think a lot of them understood why he went. What was it, $100,000 US dollars before? After tax?
After tax, in Cambodia.
In Cambodia. Like there was a few kind of boos when it was mentioned, but then after a while, once we started talking about it, I think they were all kind of like, shrugged their shoulders. Yeah, I'd probably go to Cambodia for 100 grand a year too.
M&DC Park's class, and Tribes
so
Bar, where
nice.
We were broadcasting from, is the perfect place for like pre-post match point. Just very genuine, very authentic.
Very authentic. I kind of, because it's like, if you haven't been in it before, it's almost like a large shed, but that doesn't do it any justice because it has jerseys all across the walls. It has all the league scarves hanging up. It has really cool little bits of memorabilia from both Galway and Irish internationals. It just has a very cozy feel to it, despite the fact that you are in what is essentially a large shed.
Yeah.
And the ground itself was so nice as well.
Yeah, gorgeous. If it wasn't... we imagine
hammering rain,
as is as tends to be the case in Galway. I can't, forgive me, all Galwegians, I can't quite remember the name of the pub we ended up in after Tribes Bar and after M&DC Park that night. But we were
I
there.
Was responsible and went home.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, we had to do live commentary. I couldn't. All the public transport had ended after 10 p.m., so I had to stay the night, unfortunately, in Galway. So I had to go and sample the local establishments. It was an awful situation whatsoever. We went to this pub nearby, and just some random brass band just pulled up outside the window and just performed for about an hour. Jeez. And there was just people dancing in the street.
Just
outside.
Just because you were there, Owen.
That was probably...
The news had gone through Galway that Owen Sheehan was there for
Assembled
Galway Shelburne.
And Don Deasy was there, I should shout out. He was very annoyed that we didn't ask him to come on the show.
He actually did walk by the show at one stage whenever you were chatting, because you kind of had your back to where the pitch was. And I did try to like flag him down to kind of come in and give us a little bit of his assessment of goings on down in Galway, but he didn't notice me.
Yeah, no, sadly not. We'll get him on the net. I don't think we actually had the budget to be able to stretch to
no,
get a Don Deasy
not.
Type.
No, no.
That stage. Would be Moses Dyer levels of
exactly, yeah.
Jeez.
Don Deasy needs to go and get on the Cambodian off the ball, I think, if he wants to make that sort of cash. There's one or two things that we wanted to touch on, just a little bit of spillover stuff from the weekend. And this is kind of jumping off the All-Ireland football quarterfinals at the weekend, but it's actually kind of a wider and a thought that we had yesterday regarding any sport, really. And it comes on the back of what Jack O'Connor was saying in the bowels of Croke Park after they'd beaten Armagh on Sunday. Obviously, the blood was up. Obviously, you know, there'd been a lot of criticism of Kerry over the past couple of years, or past couple of weeks, I should say. And Jack O'Connor came back and answered those critics in a really literal sense. And he went on this monologue about how he's in the business of building people up, not knocking them down, and says to those people who are knocking the Kerry team to get involved with the team if they want to actually, you know, speak their mind or actually contribute to anything. He said, like, look in the mirror and ask, what have you contributed? It's very easy to knock people, go away and coach a team. But there was one line in it which I thought was really interesting. He said, you never hear Dublin ex-players slating the team. They're loyal to the team and they're loyal to the county and they give their support. And before we like get into this, first of all, I think after the win they had, he's absolutely entitled to say whatever he wants. And I'm sure that was such a hugely motivational piece of fuel for the last couple of weeks, looking at what had been said and all the critical stuff that had been written about Kerry. But it is interesting to wonder if there is a duty on a former Kerry footballer, for example, to support the team unconditionally and to not, you know, be critical if you feel that what you're saying in your newspaper column, if what you're saying on the radio is going to be, you know, fiery and anti that team or anti supporting that team. If it's the truth, should he not be saying it?
I think it kind of depends on the place it's coming from. So if you're someone that's consistently criticizing a team and it's maybe not warranted, or you're consistently picking flaws and not actually giving a team their flowers when they deserve it, then yes, I totally understand where he's coming from. I also totally understand the frustrations that he had on the day. Like, I was down in my kitchen listening to Off the Ball, and I actually like stopped what I was doing to listen to what he said, because I thought it's rare that you get that moment of passion and calling out. He obviously had very specific people in mind as to who he was thinking of. But on the Dublin point, I just like that just makes for boring analysis as well. You should be able to constructively criticize your county, even if you played for them before, and point out the flaws of what went wrong for you, and then also take a step back and say, but also fair play. I criticized you in all the lead up to this game and you've absolutely proven me wrong, and here's all the reasons why you did it.
But is there not a, like, Dublin is such a weird example to pick out, because for so long it was a case of, come on, someone, anyone, beat us. Jeez. But there's been not much to criticise over the last 10 years from a Dublin football perspective until the last 3 years. And I think we're still in that sort of cooling off period where it's like, okay, a team that beats Dublin is probably a reasonably good team. And it's actually a case of, like, we're going to hear from Jess Pegula here talking about, like, anyone who lost a seed who lost in Wimbledon has been just going, look, they just played really well. I mightn't have had a great day, but it took a lot for them to beat me. And I think there's still that with Dublin footballers and the Dublin football community, that anyone who manages to get the upper hand on this team right now, despite the fact that they're on the wane, it's a credit to them rather than Dublin not turning up. So that's a weird example to pick from O'Connor's perspective. Also, didn't he do this last year as well? Isn't this kind of a classic move on Jack O'Connor's part of, no one in Kerry is kind of supporting us and there's a lot of criticism coming? I have a feeling that after the semi-final last year, he beat the same drum.
I actually can't remember after the semi-final last year what he said, but potentially, like, it's obviously something that's been a hugely motivational factor for them. It's a good point, though. Judge the Dublin pundits after they've had a serious defeat, or see what they actually say mid-season. It's such a fine line, because I think that if Kerry's season ended after they lost in Tullamore a few weeks ago, all that stuff then would have had a shelf life for like 6, 7, 8 months until next season started. Mid-season, and you're still alive and you've got an ability to turn your championship campaign around and to actually make it to an All-Ireland semi-final. It's a dangerous line to tread. It's also, like, I was kind of considering, you know, does Roy Keane, for example, have a duty to support Manchester United when, in his punditry in Sky Sports? Obviously not. It would be ridiculous to use this standard for Roy Keane. Does Brian O'Driscoll on this show have a duty to support Leinster or Ireland? And if he sees somebody playing poorly, or he sees a poor individual or a team performance, does he then have to say, I've got to think about my support for these teams before my level of analysis? It would be ridiculous to suggest that. But then you bring in the fact that it's an amateur game, and that's maybe where there is a little bit of a difference between those two things and the local aspect of it. But then the more you think about that, the more you think about how the local aspect actually makes what Dara O'Shea said in his Irish Times column a couple of weeks ago, all the more brave, because you know that this is going to reach these people in the camp, because they're so exposed to the local and national media and what people, especially former players from that county, have been saying. So you're kind of putting your neck on the chopping block there a small bit, because you know that it's going to be read by the manager.
Yeah, and I also think as well, though, the local aspect, like, you could apply that for any of the people you've just mentioned. You know, like, Brian O'Driscoll is obviously still in those kind of Leinster circles. He's still, you know, chatting to players. He's probably going to events, meeting them all the time. And again, is still coming on the show and pointing out aspects of, you know, this is where the team didn't perform all that well. Here's what they did well. I also don't really agree with the amateur aspect either, just because I think, like, we've talked about it so much, but, like, GA is only amateur in name, really, in the way that they're playing and the level that they're competing at. And I do think if the team, if specific players maybe were being called out and criticised in unfair ways, then maybe, yes, you would look at that specifically. But when you're looking at a whole team environment and you're talking about a team in general, I do think it's kind of fair enough to criticise what's happening. Not even just specifically in this situation. It could be any team. You could be talking about Mayo. You could be talking about anyone. I don't know if I'd fully buy the amateur aspect as a reason why you should be let off the hook a little bit.
Yeah, I suppose they are being treated as professionals in the camp. They've got access to a lot of the similar staff members that professional athletes would as well. The other thing as well that has happened since the weekend is Joe Brawley, I think on his Free State podcast, has come out to basically say his thing on Sunday was a bit, and he can't believe it's been taken so literally. Like, I mean, just if people did miss the section of O'Connor's press conference where he mentioned the column written by Joe Brawley, he said, I saw somebody writing this morning that said the only Kerry player worthy of being called a Kerry player is David Clifford. Now, David is a great player, but David would tell you that there was a fair supporting cast there today. And Brodie basically said it was clearly a bit. I don't know how or when the message is relayed to an intercounty manager the morning of a massive game that somebody's written something about you and they don't just even do their preparation. But also, to be fair, and it's not often I would stick up for Joe Brodie, it literally was a bit. He said that he thought that the pessimism in Kerry was part of the propaganda machinery down there. And he said, having spent time in the county over the last five summers, I actually believe it's genuine. So his thing that David Clifford's the only Kerry footballer worthy of the jersey, that was him
kind of feeding back what Kerry people were saying.
Exactly. So in fairness, that headline has really been lost in translation a small bit. But again, once you've won, you can say whatever you want. And I'm sure a lot of the stuff that was said about Kerry, he deemed it to be properly insulting or overly critical. So
it probably takes on a different beast as well if the entire county does feel pessimistic about your chances. Yeah. Then whatever, like an ex-player could write something and the entire county could feel totally differently and you're probably not going to pay that much attention to it. But I'd say there probably was a bit of building there where all the fans are like, ah, that's our championship over next weekend or whatever.
Yeah, and then
that gets spilled on and you're having people stopping in the street talking to you about it. There's people, you know, in our comment sections talking about it, whatever it might be. And there's a bit of a kind of add-on effect to that that probably exacerbates what has actually been said by pundits, ex-players.
As a Mayo man, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Right, the news round is here with UPMC Orthopaedic Care. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action. And you are starting with some big Gaelic Games news, Cameron.
Huge news, Owen, coming from Louth in the last few hours. Ger Brennan has stepped down as manager of the senior footballers this evening. A two-time All-Ireland winner with Dublin, Brennan took up the role in 2023 following the departure of Mickey Hart. He guided the Wee Counties to their first Leinster senior title in 68 years back in May and reached the preliminary quarterfinals of this year's Sam Maguire, where they lost to Donegal. And he spoke to our own Scarlett Heron following that defeat a fortnight ago, looking back on a successful 2025 for the Louth footballers across the board.
It certainly added value to my life, Scarlett, being part of the group. Virgil Reel, the county manager, has done an incredible job as well. Lost to a very talented thrown team in the All-Ireland final, but certainly held their own for the majority of that game, and they won an under-20 championship the first time the county had won one, I think, since 1981, and then the seniors go on to win one since 1957. So an awful lot of positives, Scarlett, and a wonderful experience for me in the management team and the players.
And just yourself, you have a very decorated playing career and now starting off your coaching career. Is that something you've always looked towards, even when you're a player, thinking I want to be a coach, I want to turn into a manager?
If I was in the house every night, Scarlett, I'd say my wife would kill me. So it's about finding a balance, I'll be honest. And I love sport, I love Gaelic Games, I love being part of a team environment. And it's about trying to, do something that you're passionate about, but also having a balance between family and work.
Yeah, it does feel that this is aligned with Dublin looking for a new manager, and he looks to be the favourite for that. Like, I see Paul Flynn saying that Declan Darcy is absolutely the next man to be Dublin manager if he were to choose it. So it's not like Ger Brennan is an absolute tap-in and Declan Darcy was so important to the Jim Gavin setup. So maybe we're connecting dots here that don't actually exist, but it does seem like pretty convenient timing.
I feel sorry for Louth at this stage. I mean, every time they seem to be getting a bit of a roll on, or obviously this year with Leinster was absolutely massive for them, it just seems like something comes in specifically on the manager front that leaves them in an unfortunate position. Now, I know there are quite a few high-level managers that have left over the last couple of weeks, so there are some options out there. But it just felt like, I don't know, like it's hard to turn down the Dubs if that is the case. I totally understand that. But with a year left, you've just achieved one of the biggest achievements in the county in nearly 70 years, and you go mere weeks later. I don't know, if you're a Louth fan or a Louth player, you must be kind of sitting there wondering, what do we actually have to do to get people to stick with this team and potentially take us that step further?
Colm Keyes is saying, it is understood that Brennan's departure at this point has not been directly driven by the vacancy that has arisen in Dublin since the weekend. Now the thing is, and we're going to be talking about this a little bit later on in terms of our Dublin hurling piece, if you're an outside manager in a county, as the Dublin hurlers have experienced so long, there's always going to be something more appealing to you at some stage. And whether that's a bigger job or a lesser job, when Micheál Donoghue, for example, has the opportunity to go back to Galway after he manages the Dublin Hurlers, Galway will always be in his heart. It's a very compelling thing for Dublin to go up against. The same thing goes for Louth and Ger Brennan. Now, Louth have experienced Mickey Hart going to Derry, which is the antithesis of what your heart is drawn to. Like, he went to a hated opposition county from a Tyrone standpoint. So that was a particularly painful moment for them, losing Mickey Hart in those circumstances. I think the Ger Brennan thing is kind of fair enough. Like, I'm not sure what specifics were involved in his agreement with the Louth County Board, but I'd read initially that it was a 2-year deal with the option of a third. So he's done his 2 years, and maybe this is all just like the end of.
Oh yeah, like, I don't begrudge him for it in any sort of way. I just think if you are a Louth fan or in the Louth setup, you are a bit like, sigh, here we go again. You know, just to get, I mean, with what they have achieved over the last couple of years and the growth that we've seen within that team, you can imagine if you're in that setup, you just want a bit of consistency and you want someone to say, here's our 5-year plan.
Yeah.
We won Leinster and now we're going to go do this. Now we're going to get to the quarterfinals or we're going to get to an Ireland semi-final. That's our next big aim.
You want to keep the guy who brought you to your best ever moments in your career. So I'd say from there, standpoint, the player standpoint, it's going to be a massive loss with Ger Brennan departing. So, look, as I say, it's not necessarily a guarantee that he gets the Dublin job, because if Declan Darcy's in the conversation for it, he is so highly thought of in that Dublin circle. So we'll see how that one actually pans out. But Louth are meeting tonight in some sort of emergency meeting to see what they're going to do on their side of things. Returning to rugby, Cameron, the pool stages have been drawn for Champions Cup.
Yeah, and another meeting with La Rochelle on the cards for Leinster in the pool stages next season. So Leo Cullen's side drawn against Ronan O'Gara's outfit for the third successive season, along with Bayonne, Leicester Tigers and Harlequins in Pool 3. A reunion with former head coach Joanne Van Horan awaits Munster in Pool 2. Meanwhile, the men in red have been drawn with Bath as well as Toulon, Ross Burns, Gloucester and Cast. Connaughton Ulster have found out their pool state opponents for the Challenge Cup, I should say. The Westerners will be in Pool 1 with Ospreys, Zebre, Montpellier, Montauban and Georgian side Black Lion, while Ulster have been drawn in a really tricky Pool 3 with Racing 92, Stade Francais, Exeter Chiefs, Cardiff and South African side the Cheetahs.
This is the same format as last year, Champions
Cup? Yes, yeah. They've decided if it is broke... Still don't fix it.
Yeah. Good news for Kathleen.
Yeah, yes.
Just me. Yes. No one else around this table.
No. Arsenal have signed goalkeeper Kepa Arrizabalaga from Chelsea for almost €6 million today. He's switched London clubs as a release clause was met, which was negotiated when he agreed to take a pay cut last year. So the Spain international spent last season on loan at Bournemouth, of course. Kepa joined Chelsea in 2018 for €83 million, which remains the most spent for a player in his position.
I haven't thought too deeply about this or read into why Arsenal are doing this. Is there an explanation out there? Because it feels like not an amazing piece of business.
Well, the main thing is just that they need a backup goalkeeper.
Yeah.
I think that's it. Like, okay, there's nothing really more to it. The funnest thing I learned today and the best part of this transfer news is that if you didn't know it, he has the ability to make birds sing. So with his father, he used to keep goldfinches, which I did not know, and teach them how to sing. So good was he at it that he won the regional bird singing competitions in 2008 and 2010.
Oh, the birdies.
He was named the Songbirds Champion of Vizcaya.
Unbelievable.
I train the birds whenever I can between training and studies, recounted a young Kepa after one of his title triumphs in which he stunned the judges.
Wow, €6 million a bargain.
That's
for this
guy. That's how much I have thought about this transfer today.
Yeah. Unbelievable. So they had a guy, they had Neto on loan from Bournemouth.
Yeah, and, so Neto's gone back. Okay, so they needed a backup to Raya. And that's basically the only reason that this transfer has happened.
He loves that, remember? Doesn't he love being subbed off halfway through games? Yeah. Famously very and cool character. Yeah.
I don't know, like, until Arsenal signs a striker, I don't think I'm going to get excited about any piece of news that comes out. That's kind of the position that I'm in at the moment.
Has Sean in Dublin's been in touch on WhatsApp to say, lads, if Davy Fitz had gone on like Jack O'Connor did, everyone would have turned on him. Poor old us, our own county people hate us, etc. Also, everybody wrote us off for Kerry. Is he joking? Fair, he's not joking. The people literally did write Kerry off in the aftermath of what happened in Tullamore. So he is correct. The criticism was real. But whether or not a person from your own county is allowed to criticise you, that's the where the debating point is, in my opinion anyway. And I think that it's all fair game, especially for former players to use their expertise to criticise their own team. The Women's FAI Cup, we have quarterfinal draw.
Yeah, and a big draw in the quarterfinal today. So holder Shelburne will take on Shamrock Rovers for a place in the final four. Two-time cup winners Piemont will come up against last year's runners-up Athlone Town. You've DLR Waves taking on Treaty United. And Newbridge Town's reward for overcoming Whitehall Rangers is a home tie against Bohemians. All of those games will be played on the week ending Sunday, August 17th.
We have League of Ireland news as well on the men's side.
Yeah, Douglas James Taylor says he was impressed by the plan laid out to him by the Bohemians management team. The centre forward became a free agent after his loan from Walsall to Drogheda United ended last month, and Bohs have announced the signing of the 23-year-old on a multi-year deal today. James Taylor revealed to in-house media that former Walsall teammate Ross Tierney helped coax him to Daily Mount.
I knew Ross from Walsall, and he spoke really highly of the club for starters, and then obviously I know from being here for a year how big of a club this is, how much representation they have for Irish people, and it was just a massive opportunity for me to play for this club. I think you've realised how much is invested in this, and how much there is a plan and they're getting towards something. And I think I'm all big on visualisation and feelings. So when I met and saw the schedule, saw what training looked like, where I'd be, just felt right.
So are we having the Oasis Bohemians jersey? That was the picture up on screen there for our YouTube viewers.
I saw it. It's grand. I think they've had nicer jerseys.
Right.
I think they're just more excited about the fact that it's Oasis and such a big name associated with it. But I've liked some of the other ones that have come in the past.
So you'll have Oasis on the front and James Taylor on the back.
Hey.
That seems like a first, right?
I see people comparing it to the classic brother Manchester City jersey from the 90s as well. So I'm sure it'll do pretty big business as well. Cameron, we are pretty much out of time, but let's just do a couple of Wimbledon scores and some basketball news as well.
Yeah, huge couple of results from the second day of the first round of Wimbledon today. So defending women's champion Barbara Krejcikova came from a set down to beat Alexandra Ayal of the Philippines 2-1. Third seed Jess Pegula crashed out, however, in straight set against Italy's Elisabetta Ciocciaretto. She is the highest seed to go out so far, while men's top seed Jannik Sinner eased through against fellow Italian Luca Nardi in straight sets. Seventh seed Lorenzo Musetti suffered a shock opening round defeat to Niko Basilashvili of Georgia, losing by 3-1. And third seed Sasha Zverev is the 12th men's seed to crash out in this year's first round. He lost to France's Arthur Randerknecht by 3-1 in centre court. 7-time champion Novak Djokovic is opening his campaign against Frenchman Alexandre Muller around now. Djokovic leads by 3-1 in the first set. And Sligo native Michael Bree has been named as the new head coach of the Ireland senior men's national basketball team. Bree replaces longtime coach Mark Keenan. He'll officially take over the role in September after he finishes his current duties as an assistant coach with the Danish national team.
Cameron Hill, thank you very much for tonight's news round. Kathleen, thank you very much for popping
thank
in.
You. Football on Off the Ball.
That was the main thing that when I finished playing football. In other words, you're bringing knowledge that you have over years of football to people who watch
join in the obsession.
Join in the obsession.
Subscribe now.
offtheball.com/join.
Ready to go further or take your ambitions to the next level? It's time to commit to curiosity with a postgrad at UL. Whether you want to enhance your career opportunities or pivot to a new one, University of Limerick has a diverse range of full-time, part-time and short postgraduate programmes designed to set you up for success. Go further and commit to curiosity at ul.ie. That's ul.ie.